Today on Annenberg Radio News.
The most important rival we have, not only for sports, but also for academics, for everything.
USC students gear up for Rivalry Week. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Monday, November 17th, 2014. I'm Charlie McGovern. Javier Bolden, one of two people found guilty of first-degree murder in the killing of two USC students in 2012, was sentenced to life in prison without parole today. Ani Ucar was there, and she now joins us in the studio. Ani, what was the scene like today?
Hey, Charlie. It was definitely an emotional scene. Friends and family of both the victims as well as Bolden's side of the family were there, packed into the courtroom. You know, there was a victim statement before the sentencing, and then when the judge was getting ready to announce the sentencing, he, gave some words of wisdom to Bolden, basically saying, you know, you've ruined a bunch of people's lives, including your own. It was very heartfelt, and, but during the entire speech, Bolden didn't seem fazed at all. At one point, he was even smiling, and yeah.
Yeah, I did hear about him smiling and the judge telling him that he should not be doing that.
Yeah. At one point, even the judge had mentioned something about hoping that the victims were in heaven and believing that they were. Right when that happened, Bolden actually mouthed an expletive to his attorney.
Well, Ani, thank you for coming in.
No problem.
And we also spoke to some USD students about the sentence.
Having life sentences for such a serious crime seems like an appropriate punishment. Obviously, we need to take the proper measures to make our campus safe.
I think that he was served justice, that he got what he deserved in a way.
I think we should blame the invisible forces that are making people turn to crime.
I mean, I'm happy that he was finally convicted, but I think it could have been a lot faster.
Bolden has already started the appeals process. USC is no longer ranked number one for international students. Alana Victor tells us who captured number one.
I won't keep you in suspense. It was New York University that knocked USC out of first place. That's according to a study from the Institute of International Education that shows NYU enrolled 200 more international students than USC, with 11,100 foreign-born students. Peggy Blumenthal, senior counselor to the president of the Institute, explains these numbers.
USC still increased its international student numbers by quite a bit. It went up by 11%. It's just that NYU went up even higher. It increased its international student enrollments by 19%. So it's not that USC really lost ground or did anything wrong. It's just that NYU had an exceptionally good year.
Most international students come to American universities from China, India, South Korea, and Saudi Arabia.
We offer a kind of education they cannot get at home. The kind of liberal arts education for undergraduates is really almost unique.
Many people were concerned that USC would suffer after the high-profile murders of Chinese students. But Blumenthal says researchers could not make any correlation between the murders and the enrollment numbers. Tony Timbasia, the executive director for the Office of International Services at USC, says he's not bothered by USC's ranking.
Our growth has been pretty steady and fairly consistent over the last several years. USC does quite a bit in terms of outreach internationally, a lot of direct recruiting.
That recruiting seems to be paying off, and Timbasia says he hopes USC will attract all kinds of students.
This isn't just for the benefit of the international students. It really diversifies the student body, and this is something that USC really holds a lot of value in.
Both Timbasia and Blumenthal agree that international students are crucial to creating a more global representation on university campuses. Alana Victor, Annenberg Radio News.
The big game against UCLA is this Saturday, and some students are making sure there's no funny business on campus. Megan Coyle takes a look.
The most famous of the annual conquest traditions is the guarding of Tommy Trojan. In the early 1930s, some UCLA students threw paint on one of the most iconic symbols of USC, the Tommy Trojan statue. Since then, the Trojan Knights, a student organization dedicated to promoting school spirit, have taken on the responsibility of keeping a 24/7 watch on Tommy Trojan. The Trojan Knights have camped out in front of the Truesdale statue since Saturday night. Tommy Trojan is fully wrapped in duct tape with a stuffed Bruin bear hanging from his sword. Brandon O is a new member of the Trojan Knights who was on Tommy Watch this morning. He's used to students giving Tommy Trojan a double take.
Everyone likes a good old-fashioned college rivalry. Builds a lot of school spirit and obviously the big lead up to the game.
O and the rest of the Trojan Knights are willing to spend their free time in between classes to uphold tradition. The USC-UCLA football rivalry dates back to 1929, when the Trojans beat the Bruins 76-0 in their first matchup. In addition to painting the campus's iconic statues, the schools have pulled several other pranks. USC stole the 295-pound victory bell from UCLA in 1941. And in 1958, UCLA pranksters rented a helicopter and tried to dump manure on USC's campuses. 5 years ago, USC students unleashed 20,000 crickets in UCLA's library. Donald Aranella, another Trojan Knight on Tommy Watch, said the rivalry is more than just pranks.
The most important rivalry we have, not only for sports, but also for academics, for everything. Because they're across town from us, and we want to show that we're better than them.
This year, the crosstown pranks started a bit earlier than usual. 9 days before the matchup, the UCLA Bruin statue was tagged with red graffiti saying, USC runs LA. The Trojan Knights say they aren't too worried about UCLA retaliating. Last year, a van of UCLA students were thwarted by DPS when they tried to come on campus during the night hours. Still, the Trojan Knights aren't getting much shut-eye.
Don't get too much sleep. He's someone that stay up all the time to guard Tommy Trojan, so definitely pretty tired.
The battle for LA will be decided at Saturday's football game. The kickoff is 5 p.m. at the Rose Bowl. Megan Coyle, Annenberg Radio News.
A Princess cruise ship line ship with passengers infected with norovirus docked in San Pedro yesterday. This is the second time this year that this particular ship has carried the stomach bug. Caitlin Plummer reports on the unsettling repetition of events.
172 people aboard the cruise ship Crown Princess fell ill with norovirus. They've been traveling for a month with stops in Hawaii and Tahiti. Experiencing a bit of deja vu? That's because 129 people on the same ship contracted the same virus while on a week-long cruise in April. Though the Princess Cruises slogan advertises that passengers will come back new, a digestive cleansing may not be what vacationers had in mind. Bernadette Burton, a spokesperson for the Centers for Disease Control, said that despite the coincidence, the two incidents are unrelated.
If this occurred once on the ship earlier in the year, that is just a different occurrence. Rarely is there carryover. The vessels are cleaned from stern to bow, a very vigorous and thorough cleaning.
According to the CDC, norovirus is spread person to person and most recover in 2 to 3 days. A statement from Princess Cruises confirms the ship and terminal were both extensively cleaned in accordance with CDC policies before the Crown Princess departed for Mexico last night.
Ride-sharing app Uber announced today that they're partnering with the music streaming service Spotify to revolutionize their passengers' experience. Alana Bracken has the story.
Rumors of the partnership have been buzzing since the CEOs of the two tech giants met in Stockholm a few months back. Starting November 21st in select cities, Uber users will be able to listen to their Spotify playlist during their rides. Brett Molina, a tech writer for USA Today, explains how the new addition to Uber's service will work.
Basically, you connect your Spotify account to your Uber account, and then when you request a ride, they'll give you a list of cars, and some of those cars may say music-enabled, which means you can use Spotify there. And then from the app, you can check out a selection of playlists, and either they're ones that are curated by Uber, and they say they're customized depending on the city you're in, or you can just use your own custom playlist. Then you control the music from your phone using either the Uber app or the Spotify app.
Molina says that Uber is using the partnership to personalize their clients' experience and put themselves a step ahead of their competitors.
When you request a ride, you can have a better experience and a more personal experience. Being able to have your own music there and available and have that accessible is one way to do that. So, and again, it's another feature that kind of puts it ahead of some of the other competitors in the ride-sharing space like Lyft most prominently.
The only catch of the partnership is that users must upgrade to Spotify Premium to gain access to in-car streaming. Uber drivers will also be able to opt out of the service if they still want control of the radio. Alana Bracken, Annenberg Radio News.
And continuing with more tech news, Facebook is looking to expand its services. Here's Rania Aniftos with the story.
Facebook may be testing a new service called Facebook at Work. It will allow users to create a profile specifically for their professional lives. The Financial Times reports the service will be completely separate from Facebook's usual profiles, giving users the opportunity to connect and collaborate with other people in their professional network. Reid Albergati, a social media reporter for The Wall Street Journal, believes it may be too soon to tell whether this new service will be more popular than professional networking sites such as LinkedIn.
Now, down the road, as the product evolves, you know, we could speculate and say, you know, it would be pretty easy for Facebook to offer the ability to make those profiles public, which would then create a sort of LinkedIn-like atmosphere, something LinkedIn will definitely or should definitely be paying close attention to.
The new service raises the issue of privacy, since Facebook is known for gathering users' data, then tailoring advertisements to the users' interests.
That's going to be a big hurdle for Facebook. They're going to have to convince these companies that that will not happen. So nobody knows what the future is really going to look like. And I think what you're seeing here is Facebook taking a stab at coming up with the next big office product.
The Menlo Park company will look to launch Facebook at Work early next year. Rania Niftos, Annenberg Radio News.
It's been a busy day for LA athletes. Here's McKenna Keel with our Sports Minute update.
USC junior wide receiver Nelson Aguilar is being recognized today for his outstanding game against Cal on Thursday night. Today, Aguilar was named Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Week and a semifinalist for the Biletnikoff Award, presented to the nation's top receiver. In the win over Cal, Aguilar had a career-best 16 receptions for 216 yards and two touchdowns. It was his second consecutive game with over 200 receiving yards. Aguilar became the first ever USC receiver with back-to-back 200-yard games. His 16 receptions were one short of Robert Woods' USC record and tied for fourth in the conference. More USC news, the men's basketball team is trying to notch the first win of the season after turning the ball over 23 times in a loss to Portland State in the Trojan season opener on Saturday night. A chance to bounce back against Tennessee Tech tonight. Tip-off is at 8 p.m. at the Galen Center. Switching gears to the professional sports world now, a huge day for the Miami Marlins, signing 25-year-old Los Angeles native Giancarlo Stanton to the biggest contract in North American sports history. The $325 million 13-year mega deal is scheduled to be officially announced in a news conference on Wednesday. McKenna Keel, Annenberg Radio News.
While the polar vortex torments the poor souls on the East Coast, we've got a beautiful week ahead of us. Look for temperatures in the upper 70s and lows at night in the upper 50s. But we do have one thing to watch out for. Officials have declared a red flag warning through the rest of the night as a result of Santa Ana winds sweeping through the area. Gusts may get as high as 60 miles per hour. Later on Annenberg Radio News, I ask LA Times columnist George Skelton about his thoughts on the UC system's possible tuition hike. They work long hours. Their breaks are interrupted by the sound of a dispatcher calling them to an emergency. They eat, sleep, and bathe all at the fire station. Some of them even work overtime, spending most of their days of the week firefighting. ARN's J.J. Maldonado brings us inside a South L.A. fire department.
Fire Station 66 calls South L.A. its home. When I arrived at 66, I was given a safety talk down in two jackets. One yellow flame resistant jacket and one bulletproof. The bulletproof jacket was an instant reality check of what a tough job the men and women at Station 66 have. What was even tougher was trying to get a sit-down interview that wasn't interrupted by an emergency call.
Coming to work at 6 in the morning, and you're on for 24 hours until 6 the following morning, and then off for 24 hours, on for 24 hours, off for 24 hours.
Engine only.
And we gotta go.
That was the voice of firefighter Sean Iansen. He has been putting out fires and helping rescue people for the past 8 years. Iansen shared with me some of his most memorable calls.
I remember going on a traffic accident. Crenshaw and Florence, somebody blew a red light and smashed a minivan with a whole family of four in there. And we show up and a buddy of mine from a different station is putting out flames of an entire family. Kids involved, mother, father, an entire family burning. kids ejected out of other vehicles, laying in gas station parking lots, obviously killed. Things like that, those are the ones that stick with you. Those are the ones that you remember a lot. It's not the 2 a.m., you know, chest pains. It's not the 4 in the afternoon, having a hard time breathing, asthma attacks, what have you. It's those ones that really kind of, they stick to your brain a little bit, so you remember those for a while. I was either 15 or 16 years old. I think it was my junior year in high school. Whatever the age it is where you usually start looking at what colleges you want to go to, start, you know, putting in applications and stuff like that. I realized that wasn't really
a few minutes in, and our interview was interrupted again by a dispatch call to a two-story apartment complex in the Crenshaw district. One of the apartments was being engulfed in fumes of smoke.
Basically made entry. It was food on the stove. There's a guy in there that had been drinking, it looks like, and passed out on the couch. So dragged him out of there and went in there, took the food off the stove and blew it out with the blowers, made the environment clear for him. He's back inside and we're out of here.
As we drove back to the station, trick-or-treaters in costumes waved at the big red truck filled with the local heroes. It led me to wonder what other holidays and special moments have these men and women missed out on.
Are there things that you miss out, like holidays, mm-hmm, or like special moments in your personal life that you miss out on because you guys are working so much?
I mean, perfect example today, it's Halloween. There's guys here with kids, young kids, you know, they're getting pictures on their iPhones from their wives. Some of them are, their kids at home are a year old, 2 years old, and they're celebrating their first Halloween. They're dressed up as dinosaurs and stuff, and I'm sure it rips these guys apart that they're not home right now with their kids, but battalion-wide, we've got vacancies all over the place of people taking off or being sick or what have you, and you got to come to work. You have to miss this stuff. And up until a couple of years ago, I'd missed every Christmas since I've been hired. So the last six Christmas Day, I wasn't home with my family. I miss birthdays. I miss vacations with my family because, you know, I got stuff going on at work and I got to come to work. And it's like that for everyone. It's just part of the deal. You know it going.
Six emergency calls later and a dinner break that was interrupted, I head out for the night. But just because I had packed up to leave, it wasn't the end for 66, and a new round of calls as the sun went down began. This is where I learned a firefighter's job is never finished. JJ Maldonado, Annenberg Radio News.
Officials of the University of California system are scheduled to make important decisions about how it will be funded on Wednesday. UC President Janet Napolitano proposed a 5% hike on November 5th. But it has been met with opposition from state lawmakers as well as Governor Jerry Brown. The plan would raise the cost of in-state tuition to more than $15,000 by 2019, and state lawmakers in Sacramento say the burden of increasing costs should be put on Californians, not students. I asked LA Times columnist George Skelton about the ongoing debate about funding the state's higher education system.
Well, the central debate is whether it's fair to increase student tuitions while at the same time increasing the pay of some top administrators and also trying to make up for contributions to pensions that weren't made. In other words, using students to make the pension system healthy. But the central issue is whether University of California is as efficient as it should be, and it should get more efficient before asking students for more money.
Regardless of where it comes from, what do they plan on doing with this money?
Well, a third of it would go for student aid. And if you want to provide money for student aid, I think it should come from all the taxpayers, the whole state, not just the students who are paying for the full tuition. And in this new tuition, one-third would go to student aid. A bunch of it would go for making the pension system healthy. And then some of it would go for hiring new professors and for enrolling 5,000 more students in the next 5 years.
Hard to believe if they've been raising the salaries of high up people.
Right. Well, the tuition now is 8 times what it was 25 years ago. And meanwhile, just a couple of months ago, they decided to raise some chancellor salaries up into the $380,000 to $480,000 category. And the UC president makes $570,000. The California governor makes only $177,000. And while the UC president makes $570,000, the U.S. president makes $400,000.
Do you see any way to compromise between, you know, maybe getting some more funding from the state, but also maybe having to slightly increase tuition?
Well, I would think they should not increase tuition at all. The compromise should be more state aid, more efficiencies by UC. That's what they ought to be doing. Leave the kids alone.
And we've been talking with George Skelton, columnist for the LA Times, who says the state needs to fund the UC system more so that tuition rates can stay the same. George, thank you for coming on the show.
Sure. Anytime.
Homelessness has long plagued the nation, but one vulnerable group is experiencing that harsh reality in record numbers. Kevin Mallory reports.
The number of homeless children in the United States has reached a record high. A report released today by the National Center on Family Homelessness titled America's Youngest Outcasts sheds light on the ever-increasing numbers. Nearly 2.5 million children were homeless at some point in 2013, and the state of California accounted for 1/5 of that total with nearly 527,000. Dr. Carmela DeCandia, director of the National Center on Family Homelessness and a co-author of the report, says one of the reasons California is one of the hardest hit states is due to its expensive cost of living.
24% of children in California are living in poverty. And what we see is a real disparity between the state minimum wage and the income that's actually needed to afford a two-bedroom apartment.
California's minimum wage is $8 per hour, but the amount needed to afford a two-bedroom apartment is nearly $26 an hour, according to the report. Shahara Hyatt serves as director of the California Homeless Youth Project, and she was not surprised that California ranks high on the list of child homelessness.
Though we've made recent progress, legislatively and otherwise, on youth homelessness in California, there's been kind of a historic lack of focus on this population specifically.
In the U.S., 1 in 30 children is homeless, and the number of homeless children rose 8% from 2012 to 2013. DeCandia believes the consequences could be dire if the trend is not reversed.
Child homelessness has reached epidemic proportions in America. If we don't act, we may lose another generation of children to this tragedy.
The state of California has a major problem on its hands, and it is in need of greater human and financial resources to combat the issue. Kevin Mallory, Annenberg Radio News.
And that music can only mean one thing. We've got Brad Stryker in the studio to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
All right. Thank you so much. Alpha Tau Omega, USC's fraternity, has officially been disbanded for 5 years. Tonight, we bring you details on the official announcement that was made earlier today.
And that makes 2 fraternities now that have left this year.
Yeah, quite the count. Hopefully, we can kind of get our game back together, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, not a great year for the row. Thanks, Brad. And remember to watch Annenberg TV News at 6 on Trojan Vision. Despite a slight dip in the NASDAQ, Wall Street edged higher this afternoon with the S&P 500 closing at record highs. Botox maker Allergan was at the center of the action, continuing its recent run. The pharmaceutical company based in Irvine was up 5% after accepting a $66 billion buyout from Actavis, an Irish firm. This buyout comes off a months-long hostile takeover attempt from Canadian Valeant Pharmaceutical, which threatened to cut funding for the drug company's research. All right. Movie star Matthew McConaughey received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame this morning. It was the latest honor in what has been a banner year for the 45-year-old from Texas. He won an Oscar for his performance in Dallas Buyers Club earlier this year, and he also was nominated for an Emmy for his role in HBO's True Detective. That's it for this Monday. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Charlie McGovern.